I believe I left off the last tape while I was still at Ant Hill Plains, south of Townsville. And if I am not mistaken, I have more or less described the countryside there. It was a hot, dusty place. Good deal of open ground, except for the anthills. But there were also a fair amount of... fair number of trees, eucalyptus trees probably, lots of kangaroos, and even more wallabies. Wallabies are really like miniature kangaroos, and they're very cute. And I wouldn't say they were tame particularly, but they're not much afraid of people either. And they invariably came wandering into tents during the night, all night long in and out, messing around to see what they could find. Nobody ever bothered him, really. There was a dirt strip there that we flew off of. And since I was attached at the time to the 40th Squadron, we flew their P-39s with them. It must have been around this time in history that the United States quit calling their pursuit squadrons by that name and changed over to the British system of calling them fighter squadrons. So everything that had previously been the so-and-so pursuit squadron and pursuit group was now the so-and-so fighter group and fighter squadron. The 40th Squadron, about this time, while we were there, I think, got some brand new P-39s. And they were P-39 Model Qs. And aside from the fact, or should I say, except for the fact that they were brand new, mostly we didn't like them very well. Partly on account of the fact that... they had some sort of servo tab, automatic servo tab on the ailerons, which made them the controls very wishy-washy at low speeds. So when you'd come in to land, you could move the stick all over the cockpit, and the airplane wouldn't do anything very much except wobble a little. And it was a very disagreeable feeling. Flying out of Ant Hill Plains was... sometimes not altogether pleasant on account of the fact that it was so hot. And after those airplanes had sat out in the sun for a number of hours and you tried to get in them, they were too hot to touch. And you got in, you wore gloves and things so you wouldn't have to touch the hot metal, but even the throttles were too hot to hold. And of course, once you got in the air, it got much better, but the fact remains that it was... seemed to me always a problem. And of course, even in the air wasn't particularly cool. It was better than it was on the ground, and at least it was moving, but it wasn't particularly cool. Anyway, we got in a good deal of practice flying with the 40th Squadron, and it was good for us. And as I remarked earlier, I'm sure the people in the 40th Squadron were extremely nice to us. They, too, were on their way up to New Guinea to rejoin their group, which meant to rejoin the 39th Squadron and the 41st Squadron, which I guess were already up there. Along about this time, orders were issued assigning some of us to the 49th Fighter Group, some of us to the 8th Squadron, and some of us to the 9th Squadron. The 49th Fighter Group also had in it the 7th Fighter Squadron, but nobody from our group at this time was assigned to them. I think this is a good time to say something about the 49th Fighter Group. It was organized back in, I believe, late 1940 in the United States, of course, and was originally stationed at Selfridge Field in Michigan. Of course, war came, and on January 12th, 1942, the 49th Group was loaded on board the passenger liner Mariposa, a ship, incidentally, that is still in existence, though it is it's laid up. It's not in service. And on February 1st, 1942, they arrived in Melbourne, Australia. And as I said sometime earlier, I believe, they were, as soon as possible, which from my notes here was not very soon, moved up to take over the defense of Darwin in the Northwest Territory. And they were up at Darwin from April 1942 until sometime in September. By that time, the 49th Group had pretty well caused the Japanese to give up their notion of trying to make a landing there. And although they didn't altogether quit making raids on Darwin, they fell off to such a degree that it was decided the 49th Group wasn't needed there anymore, and they were replaced with some Australians. And the 49th Group was sent down to Townsville to sort of regroup and get themselves put back together again. And I don't know exactly when, still in September, the 7th and 8th Squadrons went up to Port Moresby, while the 9th Squadron remained in Townsville. The 49th Group was in Port Moresby until about sometime in April 1943, and by that time we had, shall I say, conquered much of the north coast of New Guinea, and the group was moved then over to a place called Dobadura. Then in November 43, some of them were moved way up in the Markham Valley to a place called Goosep, which was no place at all. I'll come to all this later. But what I'm getting at is that after I left and came back to the U.S., the 49th Group was moved up to Hollandia, and then moved up to an island called Biak, and their next move was on Leyte, in the Philippines. Then they moved up to Mindoro Island and then up to Luzon, and eventually were moved up to Okinawa. By this time, of course, the war was over. They were stationed in Japan itself for quite some time until the Korean War, at which time they were moved up to Korea. And after the Korean War was over, they were moved back to Japan. I don't seem to have the notes that I thought I had, but anyway, eventually, a long time afterwards, they were transferred to France, of all places. Spent a while in France, and then were transferred to Germany. And eventually, I forget what year, they were finally returned after probably 30-some years of overseas service to the United States, and were based at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, where they remain to this day. Now, as I just finished saying, at the present time, the time I'm talking about right now, some of us, and I'm looking here to see how many, some of us got transferred then permanently to the 9th Fighter Squadron. There was among them was Snuffy Smith and Duncan Myers and a couple others. Altogether, there were 8 of us transferred to the 9th Squadron. Now, the 9th Squadron at this time appeared at Anthill Plains with their P-40s. And although I don't remember we had much to do with them during this period, we must have had something to do with them because I remember that I knew some of those people. And I remember one day walking down the taxiway, which was in the woods, incidentally, when Clay Tice, one of the pilots in the 9th Squadron, came taxiing down the strip in his P-40, and he stopped and motioned for me to climb up on the wing, and he gave me a ride down to the strip. I remember that. Anyway, somebody decided at this point, or along this time somewhere, that those of us who were being transferred to the 9th Squadron should go to the 9th Squadron. And I believe that the people in the 9th Squadron who were still in Australia all were living in Townsville in a hotel, probably. Come to think of it, most of the squadron, all the enlisted men and stuff, or most of them anyway, not all of them, most of them, had already gone to New Guinea. There were only some of the airplanes and some of the pilots still left in Townsville. And they were flying out of Anthill Plains. Anyway, it was decided that we should be checked out in P-40s. Now, that was a big deal, though it might not sound like it, because they had the same engine as the P-39, but they didn't have a tricycle landing gear, and the engine was in front, and the landing gear was close together, and they were an ornery kind of airplane to fly. They were particularly ornery to do anything with on the ground, especially to land. And they were ornery to take off. So it wasn't really what you'd call a routine matter to check somebody like us, with limited flying experience anyway, in a P-40. But I see from my log here that on October the 19th, they took us out to a dirt strip in the country somewhere, a place called Armstrong's Paddock, and checked us out in the P-40. Of course, we'd been briefed about it a good deal and knew what to expect and knew that when you started to take off, the thing would fight you all the way down the runway, and when you landed, it would fight you all the way down the runway. Though in the air, it wasn't a bad airplane. Anyway, all of us managed to get through this ordeal, except Snuffy Smith, and poor Snuffy Smith came to grief when he landed. Didn't hurt him, of course, didn't do any much harm, washed the landing gear out and so on. He ground looped it, I guess. And that was unfortunate, but the feeling was amongst us new boys that it could have happened to any of us. And I think the feeling was amongst the older guys who were checking us out that that they were mighty lucky that it wasn't more than one, because it wasn't a small matter. On the other hand, it should be remembered that once you had flown the ornery thing, you sort of knew what it felt like. You knew what it was going to do, and you were ready to take that on. It was much easier the second time, is what I'm saying. And I guess it was at this time that they moved the eight of us who were with the 9th Squadron away from Anthill Plains and into the town of Townsville. And I suppose we probably lived in a hotel there. But our airplanes were brought up then to the Townsville Airport, Garbutt Field, and we kept them up there, and we had some mechanics with us. And we started then flying every day in P-40s out of Townsville. And we practiced formation some, but we practiced dogfights, and we practiced dive bombing and one thing and another, getting in just as much training as we possibly could. And, of course, by this time, things were fairly civilized, and I mean by that that we had radios, we had headsets, and we had a control tower there with a regular control tower operator in it, and things were a good deal more the way they should be than they had been in the past. In the meantime, the 40th Squadron took turns with somebody else, maybe us, I don't know, sitting alert at the Townsville Airport all night. Australia was still not sure that she wasn't going to be attacked, or at least bombed. I don't know why I say or at least. But bombed at night might well have been, wasn't. But they had fighters, anyway, on the ready, 24 hours around the clock, to take off in case of any air raids. None ever happened. But what I'm getting at is that Don Raines and the other people in the 40th Squadron that I knew so well and liked so much were often up at the airport at night sitting alert, and we would go down there. As I remember, the airport was so close to town you could just walk down the main street and go there. You didn't need to ride. And go out there and visit and sit around with them till bedtime, stuff like that. Only one incident impresses itself on my mind during this period, and that was the fact that one day it was decided to give us some practice in the ground gunnery, and that meant firing at a ground target from the air. You'd dive on this target and shoot at it and then pull up. But the ground target was built of 4x4s, and it was a big, hefty structure. And I've never gotten over the fact that when we were about halfway through firing on this target, which means, you know, we took turns around and around and around, dive on it and pull up and make another circle, and everybody was in the circle going around and around. But before we were more than half done, the whole target, 4x4s and all, collapsed onto the ground. And the reason was that these 4x4s had been absolutely torn into kindling wood, practically, before those P-40s got done with them. I was quite impressed by that, and I haven't forgotten it. And it taught me a lesson about what a potent weapon a 50 caliber machine gun is, not to mention six of them. According to my log book, the last flight I flew out of Townsville on this occasion was on November the 3rd. And on Friday, November the 6th, we went up to New Guinea. Now, of course, the older pilots stayed behind, and they were going to fly the airplanes up, the P-40s. And the rest of us, the mechanics and the other pilots, were taken up there by various ways. However, four of us had the fun of being sent up to Port Moresby on a flying boat. It was a four-engine affair, huge, big thing, so it seemed to us. And along with us went an Australian infantry general and a RAAF squadron leader and some other RAAF man, plus us and plus some enlisted men. And we piled on this thing, and it left Townsville about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The flight, of course, was entirely over water all the way. And we arrived at Port Moresby. I see here, I'm looking here, exactly 5 hours later. Those old flying boats were anything but fast, obviously. Well, being young and ignorant and naive, I knew that Port Moresby was a sort of battleground, and I fully expected that when we arrived at Port Moresby, we would be met with bombs falling and guns firing and all sorts of battle going on. But it was nothing of the sort. We landed in the harbor and taxied up to a pier somewhere and got out, and there were no bombs and there were no guns. There was no nothing. It was just a sleepy little sort of village built of thatch huts mostly. And the harbor, incidentally, is very, very beautiful, not because of the shape of it particularly, but because of the different colors of the water, which were all kinds of shades of blue, turquoise, and every kind of color, and shades of colors, and greens, emerald greens, and absolutely beautiful. I never saw that harbor, but what I was impressed with the beauty of it. It was a beautiful place. And anyway, somebody came down and gave us a ride up to the 49th Group headquarters, which was located some miles inland on a hillside. Just there's nothing but a bunch of tents scattered around on the hillside, and it was so late that we had to spend the night there. It was too late to go any farther. I remember that night chiefly for this reason. The adjutant at 49th Fighter Group headquarters was a Jewish fellow by the name of Herman Tapper, T-A-P-P-E-R. Tapper was a good-humored fellow. And he had a handful of what he considered comical remarks, which he repeated over and over again. Down through all the years I knew Herman Tapper, he never gave up with those stupid remarks. I only remember two of them, but I'll tell you what they were. One of them was, he would look at you and say, "Excuse me, is your neck dirty or are you standing in a shadow?" And another one was, "Excuse me, is that your nose or a banana?" Well, he had a whole bunch of these things and he used them constantly. Anyway, he rustled us up some sleeping bags to sleep in, though we just lay on the ground. That was all right. But what was not all right was the fact that he couldn't find any mosquito netting for us, or not enough at any rate. I didn't get any, and I don't think any of us did. And in that place, you wouldn't dare sleep anywhere without mosquito netting. Those things were called mosquito bars for some reason. I don't know why, but they were. They were box-like shaped things which hung over your bunk. and they had solid cloth flaps around the bottom edges, and you would tuck those in under your mattress or whatever it was that served as a mattress, keep the mosquitoes out. Well, we didn't have any, and we didn't get any, and Tapper said, oh, you don't need any. They're not any mosquitoes up here anyway. Well, the hell they weren't, and I don't think I got very much sleep that night being chewed up by those damn mosquitoes. I remember that quite well, and we were all kind of pissed off with Tapper, though chances are it wasn't his fault. I don't know where he was supposed to get these things. On the other hand, I don't think he tried very hard. Anyway, we spent the night there and got up in the morning and had breakfast. And somebody rustled up an airplane for us, which meant a C-47, to take us up to the place we were stationed. Now, let me explain a few things. The Port Moresby area was surrounded on probably about two of its three sides with airstrips cut out of the, quote, jungle, unquote. And these strips were generally referred to by the number of miles they were from Port Moresby. Now, the big strip that the bombers all used, or most all used, was called 7 Mile. And that was, of course, 7 miles from Port Moresby. I remember that strip pretty well. It was enormously wide and pretty long, dirt, just dirt. And if I'm not mistaken, according to the information I have, that same strip, 7 Mile, is now what serves as the Port Moresby International Airport, and 747s and stuff go in there now. That was 7 Mile. There was another airfield not too far away, which was big enough for bombers, and it was called Ward's, WARD, Ward's Drome, for aerodrome, of course. There was some place right on the coast there, hard as hell to get in and out of, called 2 Mile or 1 Mile or Half Mile or some damn thing. There was 12 Mile and there was an 8 Mile and 14 Mile and I don't know what all. Then there was 17 Mile. Now, 17 Mile, I'll tell you more about later, but I mention it now because both, I believe, the 7th and the 8th fighter squadrons both flew out of 17 Mile. 17 Mile was way out in the jungle and was built in a swamp. Why, I don't know, but the engineers just cut down all the trees and bulldozed out this swamp and filled it in with dirt and put one of those metal runway toppings on it, and that's where it was. Well, the 9th Squadron was going to be stationed way, way off from anybody and everybody at a place called 30 Mile. And up to 30 Mile was where this C-47 took us. I guess it would be on the morning of Saturday, November the 7th. Now, this was our new home. I'll try as best I can to describe what this was like, this area, a little bit. It was west of Port Moresby, along the coast. But it was inland, probably 4 or possibly as much as 5 miles inland from the coast and west of Port Moresby. And the terrain there, is typical of much of New Guinea, along there anyway. The land wasn't more than 3 or 4 at the most. I doubt if it's 2 or 3 feet higher than the sea level. There were no beaches to speak of. There was a beach maybe 3 feet wide at the most, and there were coconut palms and stuff. But where 30 Mile was, it was mostly a huge flat plain, miles long, probably 8 or 10 miles long and 4 or 5 miles wide. Some trees there, but a lot of it nothing but tall grass and very, very flat. And there was at least one native village there in the trees. Maybe more than one, I don't remember, but one. If you went inland, straight inland from the coast, and you had gone 4 or 5 miles, you came to a place where the land started to rise. The mountains really started to begin there, I guess, and it happened rather abruptly. But it didn't rise abruptly into the mountains. Right at the point I'm talking about, was just a hill, a rather high and big hill, more like a ridge. It was so big that rose there. And at the foot of this hill was a solid coconut grove, coconut palm grove, I guess. And it was just on the outside of this grove, in the flat plain part, that the strip was that we used for the our airplanes. It was a dirt strip. There was no metal or anything, just hard-packed dirt.